families really start, they get that feeling in their gut of, oh God, you know, like I would rather deal with anything else. I'd rather go through calculus again.
You are listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness, your number one resource for practical tips and insights, empowering you and your family to live well with Alzheimer's. Hello, I'm Mike Good of Togetherness. Welcome to episode 60 of the Alzheimer's Podcast, your number one source for practical tips and insights. My goal is always to empower you and your family to maintain a positive experience, reduce and eliminate the need for medications, and make your time together with those you care for the best it can be. For most of us, driving is an ingrained part of our lives. We zoom here and there whenever we want or need to. This independence comes with a huge responsibility, however, because of the safety element. So it's no wonder this is a huge problem for many families as they worry about their loved one. In this episode, Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa, is going to share strategies to help you navigate this delicate situation. Christy, the loss of independence, I am sure that is one of the most emotional situations that a loved one can go through, the family can go through, and at the heart of that oftentimes is driving. I know we see this come up a lot, and it's not just with people with dementia, it's with older adults in general, where at some point the family wants to intervene and take those car keys away. So this is probably going to be a popular topic with our listeners.
I would imagine so. The only thing I would say, a little caveat to, you said the family wants to intervene and take away the keys. I would say the family wants to take away the keys, but they don't want to intervene because nobody wants to do that. And you just nailed it on the head, Mike, with the loss of independence. And that's especially for those of us on the West Coast in the United States. Cars equal independence. It is huge. It's not like, New York, right? Where there's Chicago, where there's just amazing public transit and people can go their whole lives without driving. Right. So this is a huge, huge, big deal.
Yeah, I can't imagine being restricted when I want to just jump in my truck and run down the corner drugstore and grab something or, you know, just go for a, well, I don't really go for a drive anymore like I used to when I was a kid, but I can't imagine having that taken from me. And because that's so ingrained, that's, as you've talked about, those neural pathways, that's a groove in our brain that we're used to having the choice and being able to do.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, for a lot of people, as we get older, like I'm 48 and I've noticed, like, I don't quite have the visual juice I used to have at night, right? So I always have to be wearing glasses if I'm driving at night. People can naturally get there and feel like, you know, I'm not that comfortable driving in certain conditions or at certain times of day, and kind of shy away from that. Then dementia happens. And it's still, but it's like, it's the symbol of independence. So they may be thinking like, well, I'm not going to drive at night, but it's just the idea of like the car's in the driveway and I could go somewhere if I needed to. The problem though with dementia is a lot of times we rely on that mindset because we know that's the mindset our parents had for the last 10 years or whatever. Like they haven't driven at night, but we're banking on the fact, which is not a fact, that this is never going to change, that our person is not going to have that moment where they think, for whatever reason, right? Well, dementia is the reason, but they think that their baby needs to be picked up from the nursery. Yeah, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, but that's not what's present for them in that moment. In that moment, they're thinking they need to get somewhere to protect their child or pick up their child or do something like that. And then boom, they're out the door and in the car. Then what? that's where we have a problem, is because much like with so-called wandering, where people leave their home for what we can't predict who's going to do that or when they're going to do that. And it's that moment where they decide they need to be someplace else, where that's what their brain is telling them. You need to be someplace else. So if they don't have a vehicle, it would be so-called wandering. If they do have a vehicle, we call it driving, right?
Right.
Where somebody has taken off. And so both are dangerous situations for a person, but driving involves danger for others as well.
You know, and Christy, I've noticed in the news a lot more lately where an older adult becomes lost. And this is a little digression here, but when they jump in the car, they end up hundreds of miles away.
Right.
Sometimes they end up using public transit. You know, even in that urban setting that you discussed, like New York or Chicago, they're used to the, you know, public transit. They can end up 100 miles away easily too. And so that's kind of the same. You know, it's happening more and more, and we need to learn from you how to intervene and help keep our loved ones and others safe.
Yeah, it is. It's sad that it is happening more and more. So some fairly recent things that I've seen, there was a man who was found in his car. He was still alive, thank God. The reason, and he was hundreds of miles from home. And a woman was playing Pokemon Go. And that's how she happened upon him.
Wow.
And I'm not really sure how that game works, but I know people like find clues and go places. And so she was following a clue, and then boom, she found this elderly man who was clearly disoriented and in a car and not where a car should be. And so that's what ultimately saved his life. There was a Canadian couple that I read about, again, I think fairly recently, where a car, I don't even know that a car was involved, but had left the home in bad weather. And, you know, stuff like this happens. There was another couple that I think were in a ditch. Then there's the kind of infamous case of the man who was driving and he thought he was hitting the brakes, but he hit the gas instead and ran over several people and killed some at an open air farmer's market. The thing is, the court system does not care. Dementia is not a defense. A diagnosis of dementia is not a defense.
Right.
That does not work.
And each state is, in the United States, each state is has different laws. I noticed that some the doctor has to inform the DMV upon diagnosis, and other states the individual still allowed to go test until they're proven unable to safely drive.
Right. So this is a really important point that you just brought up about doctor involvement and DMV. And so I want to make this piece really clear. So in Oregon, what is supposed to happen is the doctor is supposed to inform the DMV. Does that happen 100% of the time? Doubtful. But let's say it does. So the doctor informs DMV, and then what DMV does is send a notification to the person's home, telling them that they need to come in for retesting. Then what typically happens is the family, who's been pushing to make all of this happen, jumps in when the person says, I got a notice from DMV, I have to go, and you need to take me, and blah, blah, blah. And then the kid takes time off work, and okay, well, let me go get you the study guide, and blah, blah, blah. You're kind of defeating the purpose when you do this, because the DMV has sent the notice. So the first thing is your person even going to notice that the DMV sent a notice and know what to do with it? So that's step number one, right? If they do, they see, okay, this is a notice, they understand what it means, then when they call you saying, you need to take me to DMV, like, what? Why do I need to take you to DMV? What are you talking about? What's going on? This is not your responsibility. It's your person's responsibility to figure out how are they going to get to DMV. Do they need to study for the test? How are they going to get the study materials? These are all parts of cognition, right? If someone is truly able to continue driving and that's not an issue, then they should be able to figure out how they're going to get to DMV, how to make the appointment, how to study for it, all of those things. That's all part of this process. So even though, you know, I think we're caught in that space between we want to be good family members, right? We want to make sure our person is safe. We also just want to be good citizens and make sure that people out on the street are safe from our person driving. And then we don't want our person to have bad thoughts about us or to be mad at us. So then we're going to jump in and try and save the day. Nope. That's actually not helpful in this particular situation. So that your person needs to be navigating all of that.
Well, is not an easy situation because I'm picturing, you know, one of our listeners in this situation and they go, no, Dad, you need to do this on your own because, you know, if your cognition is, you know, good enough, you can figure it all out. Well, that's not going to go very well.
Yeah, so I would say that would probably not be the right way to handle it. And please don't write down anything Mike said as a script to use. So instead, you know, we of course always want to be, you know, bringing the good stuff, right? Respect, kindness, love, empathy, and compassion. So if Dad says, I got a notice from the DMV, you go, oh, well, do you know what they said? No, what'd they say, Dad? I can't drive anymore. I have to go for a driving test. Oh, okay. Well, you need to take me. I'm sorry, Dad. I work full time. I can't take time off for things like that. Well, you know, Dad, I know you'll be able to figure it out. You got this. It doesn't have to be contentious. We don't have to be like, well, Dad, the doctor thinks you have dementia. Therefore, you know, right. You know what I mean? Like, if you want it so bad, you better figure it out. We're not going to say something like that. And again, of course, this is where we jump right back into using our superpower, right? So is our person upset because somebody is questioning their potential independence? Are they upset about driving specifically? And how, you know, what's the best way to have this conversation with them, right? Additionally about DMV, and this is a huge misperception that people have, is they erroneously believe that the DMV is an enforcement arm. It's not. So here's an example. Your person gets, let's say your dad gets a notice from DMV saying he has to go in for testing. He tosses it into the pile of junk mail and continues about his life driving. And then families are like, what? The DMV sent him a notice. They never did anything after that. Right. Because they're not going to go to his house and pick him up and bring him for the test. Right. Not going to happen. And this is, I see this particularly with men versus women, much more with men by a wide margin. They go, okay, that notice from DMV can go in the kindling pile. I have a car and I have car keys and I'm going to keep driving. And the only way you are ever going to be able to make that stop is to remove the vehicle. The end. Because their logic is keys plus vehicle equals I drive. That's it. So you could even do what I don't recommend and make the appointment for them and take them down there and they flunk the test and the DMV says, that's it. You know, you no longer have driving privileges. As long as that person has keys to a vehicle and a vehicle, they will continue driving. Because it kind of goes back to what we've talked about before when we can even get in that argument, right? If it's, let's say it's a spouse that we live with that wants to drive and the doctor said they can't, and we go, no, you can't drive. Don't you remember the doctor said? Well, no, they don't remember. And so then we go through this whole thing of the doctor said da 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 da, and the person says, that doctor is an idiot. That doctor doesn't know what he's talking about. And people say this all the time about the DMV. They don't know what they're talking about. I can still drive. I'm fine. Watch me. again, we're talking about, you know, dementia affecting the whole brain. And so judgment is one of those things. And people are going to think that they can continue to do something safely, even if objectively that is not true. And a piece of paper or lack of a license is not going to stop them from doing it when they still have the means to do it. So that is something that is really important that care partners need to know. That is typically the way it goes down.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Now, I believe in our episode Addition Before Subtraction, we touched on this a little bit as an example, because it's not always practical to just to get rid of the cars and or car, and you know, there's car keys laying around, and you had a good technique on how to diffuse the situation when mom or dad have the keys in their hand and they're heading out the door. Can you maybe go through that scenario again using addition before subtraction?
Right. Well, first, I would recommend everybody listen to that episode because it's one of our favorite episodes.
Absolutely.
Addition before subtraction. And also, because I throw out examples so often, I don't know specifically which one I used in that episode.
Oh, that's okay. I'm sure you'll come up with another great one.
Thanks, Mike. The principle of addition before subtraction is if we don't want our person to drive anymore, let's say, then we need to figure out how are they still going to get to where they need to go in the meantime, right? And we're going to have all of that figured out first before we take the car keys and the car away. So addition before subtraction, right? We're going to add in those options. So if you know that your mom really only goes to the beauty parlor every other Friday, and while she's out, she does grocery shopping, and then occasionally she might meet your niece for lunch. If that's kind of, you know, oh, in church too, of course, but that's really the extent of her using the car, that's a fairly easy fix, right? So when the church lady swings by, picks her up for church, your niece picks her up to go to lunch, and you have go-go grandparent or Lyft come and do the ride for the beauty parlor and grocery shopping, or you do it or whatever. But see what I'm saying? It's pretty easy if there's a predictable schedule.
Right. Or it's, you can drive them.
Exactly. And it's not unmanageable if there's more than that. But if your person is like really active and they're driving a lot, chances are much sooner rather than later, they're going to be in an accident, because if they're super active and that requires a lot of driving, their exposure is just so much more out on the road, right? So that makes it even more imperative that you're going to need to jump in and intervene. One of the questions I get from people a lot is, but how do I know when it's time to do that? And I made up a quiz on how do you know when it's time to intervene about driving, because that was a question I got so much, but I just really couldn't find exactly what I was looking for as far as, yeah, how do people know? So I did this quiz, and you can take the quiz and just figure out pretty quickly, like, is it time or is it not time? And I think just the quiz itself gives you the questions on that, give you a really good idea to kind of jump into that mindset of, oh yeah, maybe I hadn't considered this circumstance or that circumstance.
I will provide a link to it for our listeners to that quiz on the show notes.
Great. And then also, because I know that this is yet another one of those things related to dementia where, you know, people just, families really start, they get that feeling in their gut of, oh God, you know, like I would rather deal with anything else. I'd rather go through calculus again than have to deal with this situation because it is so gut churning and emotional and difficult. I wrote a little ebook called Driving in Dementia. And I can't remember what the subtitle is, but the essence of it is, we want to handle it in a way that, you know, of course allows your person to keep their dignity, right? But keeps everyone else safe at the same time. And so I'd be happy to provide the link for that, Mike, in the show notes so that people can access that too. And that's really step by step on like, how do you manage this?
Okay. I was just envisioning, you know, part of getting in the car, It's also getting you out of the house. It's getting you out and interacting with other things in the environment, in the world. And that's healthy. That helps neural pathways. So if we do an all or nothing approach to this, where we just get rid of the car, or we disable it, or we throw the keys away, and we never let our loved one get out and have those freedoms that come from that independence, then we've really gone way too far.
Oh, yeah, because this is not designed to be a punishment, right?
Right.
It's just we want our people to be safe, and we want the people around them to be safe, too, right? So we don't want a neighborhood kid getting run over. We don't want to have to replace the trash can or the mailbox or the garage door. And we don't want our person sitting at home feeling bad about themselves and about their life, like they're being, you know, they've been sent to their room and punished for something, because we never punish for something outside someone's control. And dementia is certainly outside their control. So they're not doing anything to be an awful human being. It's just that, areas of the brain have, they're under attack because they have dementia. So in that, going back to addition before subtraction, we want our people to be as social as possible, because that helps them stay verbal, helps them keep that verbal fluency. It helps them keep their language skills. It helps them function at a higher level for longer, the more that they're using language. So we definitely want that to continue. And let's look at, what are some things that they can be involved in that we know they enjoy? Again, this is you bringing your expert status on your person into play here. So, is it church-related activities? Is it a neighborhood bunco group? Is it, going to the beauty parlor, grocery shopping, whatever? There are those activities that we kind of just take for granted because they're part of daily life. And then other things that are fun. And then who can enhance that fun? Is there a cousin, a niece, a sister, grandkids? Who all in that person's social circle, in your social circle, can provide rides for these things and be a participant in these things also? And then, of course, in-home care, if you have companion care for your person, just request that it's someone who's able to drive, and they can take them places too. And for a lot of people, it is actually a relief to not be driving anymore. It's all in how we frame it, right? So if we feel like we do have some time on our side and nothing bad has happened yet, then we want to start introducing these fun things, doing that addition, right? And so they're in the swing of, well, yeah, every time Janet comes over and we go to Bunko, she drives. She comes by and picks me up and drives, and that's great. And then Joe is so sweet. He comes by and picks me up for church because it's right on the way. And he likes to stay for the potluck too, right? So when we just make it kind of a natural progression of things and very organic in the way that it unfolds, we definitely eliminate the chance for resistance. Okay. And we're not linking it directly to driving. We're not doing that. We're not making driving this thing. We're just adding in these great pieces that are going to be fun no matter what. Then, we've done all of that. Now we can look at, okay, we're going to tackle the car thing for sure.
I'm envisioning walking out of my house and my car is missing. And I really want to, I'm on a mission. I want to get down to CVS and, buy a candy bar or something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take off walking. And I guess my point is that we have to be careful that, because every time we alter or change something, it can pop up a new issue somewhere else. And we kind of touched on that in the beginning when we mentioned the so-called wandering and becoming lost. But just because the car is not there or available doesn't mean that that person isn't still going to try to complete their mission.
That's true. And we also have to look at, typically, when will are a person, you know, when does driving become an issue and kind of where are they in the process? So for some people, like, honestly, this never even becomes an issue, either because Granny never drived. It was always Pop-Pop that took her places and, you know, so it's no big deal. Or a lot of times women will just say, yeah, you know, they've already been relying on family for rides places because they don't really like driving in certain conditions. And so it's just a natural progression, no problem. And then for men, like I said, it's typically, it's a bigger issue. But what are we, you know, where is your person in the process? And then if I know Mike, you know, and his wife Maria knows him, right? So Maria knows he loves a candy bar. She knows that he needs a lot of time outdoors because that's just feeds his soul. So Maria is going to have some things in place already before we ever get to this whole driving thing, right?
Right.
That are fulfilling a lot of those needs, mm-hmm. so that we're doing pretty much everything we can to minimize the opportunity of that perfect storm showing up where Mike has to take off, headed for the CVS.
Okay.
And again, it's different with every person, but typically somebody who is really highly functioning, who is able, and by that I mean somebody who is able to open the front door, go, oh my God, my truck is missing, is going to call 911, but going to call the police department and make a report that their truck's been stolen, right?
Exactly.
If somebody is able to do that, typically taking the car keys away is not going to be our first priority, right? They would be super early in the diagnosis, typically, if they're able to pull all those pieces together.
Okay.
Because remember, you know, the loss of function is kind of, it's happening on a gradient, right? And we're headed in a certain direction as that's happening. So being able to work a phone is a skill that people lose over time. Being able to dial an unfamiliar number. And once that is pretty much off the table, then like being able to dial a familiar number. And then being able to just dial out of favorites, and then not being able to dial a phone at all, but still knowing how to answer a phone. So it's a process of degrees. And so likewise, being able to put thoughts together of, I want a candy bar. And kind of in your example, Mike, you're like, I want a candy bar. I'm going to go to the CVS, you know, either in my truck or I'm going to walk. That would mean that you're able to hold on to that thought that you want that candy bar and that the only place to get it is at the CVS.
Okay.
It's not anywhere in your house, and that there's action you need to take to get to the CVS, which may be grabbing keys, but definitely is opening the door. And then going, so you see what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. there's a complicated series of actions that a lot of times we take for granted because they're in our neural pathway, right? We just know. So that, and I think that was just a great example, Mike, because it really helps, I think, in explaining it in more detail, alleviate some of the anxiety that we as dementia care partners can feel when we're kind of just, you know, wide-eyed thinking like, oh crap, taking the keys away, you know, from my parent, that's huge. And it is huge. But then we kind of put everything into context of where would your parent be in this process when we get to that point?
Right.
What, you know, what are all the things that are happening kind of globally, not just specific to driving, that then we go, okay, kind of breathe again and breathe through it. So that's really important. One thing that I do think it's important to point out too is there are some ways to definitely not handle this. And so one is like, and I've seen this numerous times, unfortunately, person had a car that the spouse really likes. So it's typically a sports car. I've seen several of these situations. I've worked in several of these situations where it's this really cherry sports car. So the spouse doesn't want to get rid of it because they really like the cherry sports car, even though it wasn't their primary vehicle. It was the spouse that has dementia. It was that person's primary vehicle. But the other spouse really likes it, so they don't want to get rid of it. So they're leaving it in the garage.
Right.
And every time they come back from wherever, right, with their person, they see, there's that reminder. That's mine. That's my car. And the other spouse will try to drive it with them in it. And the natural reaction of the person with dementia is like, why are you driving my car? That's my car. I drive it. And that can lead to a big argument, as I'm sure you can imagine. So visual cues really cannot be underestimated. We can either use them to help us, or they can be used to bite us in the butt, as in this example. So that's something that also needs to be kind of carefully caught through. If it's a really significant vehicle, something that there was a big attachment to, probably that visual cue sticking around is not the best idea.
Right. Well, Christy, this is, like most things dementia, this is definitely a complex and topic, and everybody's situation so it's going to be a little bit different. So I'm really looking forward to sharing that quiz and your ebook with our listeners that on the show notes. So, but we're at the end of the time here. So a last thought or two before we wrap up?
I would just say that this particular situation, as with any other situation related to dementia, remember to bring the good stuff. If you are able to navigate through this by bringing the good stuff, respect, kindness, love, empathy, and compassion, you will never regret it.
All right, Christy. Well, thanks again. And I look forward to our next week's discussion.
Me too. Thanks. Bye.
All right. Bye now. This concludes our conversation with Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa, right here on the Alzheimer's Podcast, your number one source for practical tips and insights. Be sure to check out the show notes for any mentioned resources or links at togetherinthis.com/episode60. Bye now. You've been listening to the Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness. For more information and to get the resources mentioned in this episode, visit togetherinthis.com/podcast.